shop and for the opportunity to keep this talk.
So this talk is about like what I like to show in the talk. It's like you could call it a case study of how like one illustrative example of how the combinatorics of non-trusting partition is used in fibro partition. So I like to show like some pre-probability results, some formulas, some facts, which are like pre-probability, but which are obtained by combinatorial method. And I like really to show like illustrate, for instance, like these two typical features, yeah, for how combinatorics of non-trusting partitions appear. One is so at some point it's like kind of there's going to be some, so beyond the formulas, there's going to be some combinatorial structures, and there's going to be some bijective groups which kind of prove the formulas. Yeah, and I have today for the case at hand, I really want to show how that comes. I have a nice example, I think, yeah, which is typical for how the things appear. And on the other hand, the bijection in question is quite a nice one, very easy to understand, easy to present. Yeah. Okay. The second feature is that the non-crossing partitions do some combinatorial work, establish a formula, but this is usually in an algebraic framework, and then to move to the analytic framework, which is like the C-star framework, which is the one of interest. Yes, one uses operator models for the objects that have been considered. Yeah. So and I say like this is what I plan to kind of try to illustrate with today's talk. And let me also mention that uses of non-crossing partition in pre-probability, yeah, there's like many examples appear in this recent monograph by Nika and Speicher, yes, which was published by Cambridge University Press last year. Yeah. Today's talk is not from the book, but anyway, it's not from the first edition of the book. It's current joint work with Sherban Belli. Yeah. Okay. And I'll start by presenting. So I'll review how the like what kind of results I'm looking at. Yeah. And I said in the title it's something about in the title and in the abstract I said it's about infinite divisibility with respect to free additive convolution. Yeah. And the connection between that and the free Brownian motion. Yeah. And let me go over first, like, what's the situation in the case of one variable, yes, where you really have those analytic, basic analytic objects, yeah? And let me call, like this up, see, let that be the set of distributions with compact support on the real line. This review would go with the CD move, yeah, because the analytic machinery goes for distributions which don't have to have compact support, but I'm keeping it because when I go to several variables, that's going to have to be like, those would be bounded k-tuples, k-tuples of bounded elements. So therefore it would be the compactness of the support is relevant to what I'm doing. Yeah? And let me remind you that here we have, this is a very basic operation, free additive convolution, yeah, which reflects the addition of two free self-adjoint elements in a C-star probability space. Yeah. This was introduced and studied by Voiculescu since the very beginnings of pre-probability, so papers from 85. Yeah. So the okay. And here is the, like, in order to handle this operation, it's also introduced by Voiculescu, the R transform, yeah, which linearizes the theory of convolution in the sense. So the R transform, here we view it as a power series, it's a convergence series in a neighborhood of zero, but here we view it as a power series. And Voiculescu introduced it from his papers in the 80s, yes, and proved this relation. Yes. So the R transform of the theory of convolution is the sum of the R transform. Yeah. Here what I'm using an R transform which is shifted by Z, according to those papers from the 80s, but the linearization is of course the same. The alpha ends are called the free cumulants of mu. This terminology and the significance of the alpha ends, the combinatorial significance in connection to non-crossing partitions, appears in the work of Speicher in the 90s. Okay. And another. Moving ahead. So clear. Like if you take a mu in DC and do free additive convolution of mu with itself n times, then the R transform is multiplied by a scalar factor of n. Yeah. And turns out that in fact you can do this you can use this kind of formula to define convolution powers with respect to PLD convolution, even if the exponent is not an integer. Yeah, because it turns out that always there exists a unique, so for any mu in DC there exists, and for every t greater or equal 1, there exists mu. This new distribution in this denoted mu to the power box plus t, yes, which is uniquely determined by the fact that it has that transform equal to t times that transform of mu. So we have this convolution power and the infinite divisibility that I mentioned in my title is connected to that. Yes, in the sense, so mu is said to be infinitely divisible when you can take powers, convolution powers 1 over n for every positive integer. Yes, so what I'm saying here is, so for every n, there is a mu n such that mu n to the power box plus n is mu. So this mu n is a kind of mu to the power box plus with exponent 1 over n. And I'll use this notation, so this e in d, yes, is that if it is divisible, I don't put here a plus in a box, but when I say this is in connection, so if it is divisible with respect to that, to this operation that I'm looking at. Yeah. And for such an infinitely divisible distribution, then it's immediate to see that effect, so therefore convolution powers, yeah, I said, on the preceding transparency that for every mu, you can define the convolution powers for every power t greater than equal 1. If it is divisible, have convolution powers with all exponents bigger than t. Okay. So, let me now mention another fact. So in my talk, I have an auxiliary operation. So the what I want to look at is free additive convolution, but let me mention there is a parallel theory of Boolean convolution, which goes exactly on the same line. So it is defined to reflect the addition of self-adjoint elements which are Boolean independent from each other instead of being free from each other. The linearizing transform. Well, so actually there is more than one point. There are several ways of saying what is the linear the linearizing transform for the Boolean convolution. One of the one point of view would be to say that it's just the reciprocal Cauchy transform which does the job. But here, in order to go in parallel with what I had before, I say we have this eta series, yes, which is a series in the same spirit as the R transform. The coefficients are what you call Boolean cumulants of the measure. They are defined in a kind of same idea, only that you use the interval partitions instead of non-crossing partitions. Yeah. This linearizes. Yeah, you have the addition formula. Yeah. And you can define the convolution powers. Yeah, by same idea. Mu to the power box plus t, yes, is defined as being the unique distribution in DC, which has eta series equal t times the original eta series. And here in this case, every mu is divisible because you can take, so it turns out that this makes sense. So this convolution power with respect to box plus can be defined for every t bigger than t. And no matter, so all mu's have this kind of power for all t bigger than. Yeah. And in fact, I should say like this is an instance, so So in general, like both from the analytic point of view and the combinatorial point of view, box plot is a simpler, U plot, so Boolean convolution is simpler than what you always do in the parallel universe of the theoretic convolution. Yeah? So it's simpler, but like what I like to point out is that it is a useful tool when studying infinity with respect to box plot, to the the additive convolution. Okay? And in connection to that, let me mention here this fact, like in a very strong paper in 99, Berkovich and Pata, so there they observed what's being called they have two bijections, the one which is referred to as the Berkovich-Pata bijection. It's not the one that I'm using here, it is the second bijection which appears towards the end of their paper, which I'm going to call the Boolean-Berkovich-Pata bijection. Yeah, and they obtained it by looking in parallel at limit theorems for pre-additive convolution and Boolean convolution. Yeah? And this led, like by looking at how those limits arise and how they are parameterized, they obtained this bijection. Here you have all the distribution. So again, like this is part of what I'm saying, like the Berkovich and Pata paper have it without the speed, but we can also restrict it here with the speed. Here is all the distributions in VC for the reason that they are all easily divisible with respect to Boolean convolution. And so this is all of this speed. In bijection with the easily divisible one.
Okay.
There are a number of ways of understanding, like actually if you take a combinatorial point of view to understand this Boolean Berkovich-Pata bijection, there are a number of ways of looking at it. Yeah? If you want an amusing one is that you can express it this Boolean Berkovich-Pata in fact goes so you take mu, you take it to the power 2 pre-additive convolution and then you take it to the power 1 half, which is always possible with respect to the Boolean convolution.
Okay.
So they have this. And in that paper with Belinsky, we actually noticed the following. We made the following observation that in fact you can so instead of 2 and 1/2, you can define so for every t. You can define a transformation of the space of distribution with compact support. Again, this works without compact support, but I'm doing compact support here. By this formula, so the case t equals 1 corresponds with what on the top. And then these transformations, they form a semigroup. And at t equals 1, you obtain the Boolean Berkovich-Pata bijection. Yeah? And what I like to kind of look at, more carefully is the same paper we observe how these BTs so these BTs if you fix a mu and you start applying BTs to it, then BT of the BT of mu's they're like a process which moves towards infinite divisibility. Yeah? So mu evolves towards becoming infinite divisible with respect to free additive convolution. Okay. And we observe that actually this applying these BTs has a direct kind of disconnectly, like you can do kind of a change of you can use one transformation which converts this evolution with the BTs into free Brownian motion or vice versa, free Brownian motion becomes evolution under these BTs. Yeah. And let me tell you how this connection is described. Yes, in one variable, it's quite nice. So you look for every mu. Yes, we look at the Cauchy transform, which goes from the upper half plane to the lower half plane. And but actually, it turns out that with like better properties, better. Many times to look at the reciprocal Cauchy transform, which is 1 over d mu, and which goes from the upper half plane to itself. In fact, also this has kind of like properties like it's increasing the imaginary part, the various very good properties. And by using basic Cauchy transform theory, it's easy to see that. So given a nu, you look at the minus Cauchy transform, which is a function from the upper half plane to itself. Always you can find there is a unique nu such that the negative of the Cauchy transform you can write it in this other way in terms of the mu. Yeah, so f mu of z minus z is also a function from the upper half length to itself. Yeah? And what I'm saying is that it's easy to observe by knowing the, like looking at the descriptions of Nevanlinna descriptions for analytic functions on upper half plane, any function like this is of that kind. Yeah? So for every mu, there is a unique mu. Yeah? And so this defines a transformation for the space of distributions with support compact, with compact support, yeah. So which we're gonna call phi, yeah. Okay. So so phi, yes, is a transformation from dt to dq, which sends nu to mu when mu and nu are connected in the way I mentioned. That equation starts blue, starting the blue. Okay. And it's that's a one-to-one map. It's you can describe, so the image is the measures with so centered and with various one. Yeah. And here is the connection with the BTs. Yes. Yeah? So here is the connection between BTs and speed Brownian motion. So this is phi. Yeah. If you look at it, so say you have phi of nu equals nu as above. Yeah. And then you let nu evolve with the free Brownian motion. So we have this convolution with the semicircular distribution. And what is mu doing? Then mu is evolving under the BT. So that's the observation, yeah, that this evolution towards the infinity BT is in fact directly connected to the free Brownian motion by this phi. Okay, so this was one variable. Certainly, like up to now, doesn't match what I said that I would do, because I said that I'd like to show how combinatorics is being used, and even show a bijection of how it's being used. Yeah. So this will be now I'd like to point out that in fact most of what was there can be done in k variables. Yeah, so actually, if you have to use combinatorial tools, that's another feature. If you know that the multivariable situation is not much more difficult than the one-dimensional situation. Once you understand how the combinatorics works, it's gonna give multivariable results as well. And so start kind of quickly going over this again. So now it's dc of k, yeah. So dc of k is so these are now the so this is the multivariable analog of dc, which I had before. Yes. Yeah? So a set of joint distributions of k tuples k tuples of self adjoint elements in a C-star probability space. Yeah. So if you have a C-star probability space A phi, a C-star algebra with a state, yeah. And if you have A1AK self adjoint elements in A. Yeah, then the joint distribution is a linear function of a mixed algebra of polynomials, which kind of, when you apply it to monomials, it reflects what the state phi was doing to the little a in the mixed algebra. And, this is certainly these are like many of the things that I'm going to review now also have been known for a while. Yeah, so, the free additive convolution can be defined here, yeah, by the in the same way. Instead, like in the one-dimensional case, it was reflecting the addition of two free self-adjoint elements. Here, it reflects the addition of two k-tuples, such that the first k-tuple is free from the second k-tuple. Yeah. So we have the operation. We have in the combinatorial approach, yes, we have the three cumulants. Yeah, these alpha sub I1 IM, which appear in the formula on the top, and they are organized naturally in a series which is a multivariable analog of the series
I showed him the first part of the dot, and so that's the R transform for a measure for a distribution mu in this T of K. Yeah? So R mu is a series in this space, so series in non-commuting indeterminate Z1 to Zk and without a constant. The linearization continues to go.
Yeah? And also the convolution powers continue to exist. So for every mu in this K and for every t greater or equal 1, again for all t greater or equal 1, you can define this convolution power as the new distribution in this K, which is R transform equal to t times R mu. And I wanted to mention, so I didn't write that, but now it occurred to me while I was looking at my transparency before, so that this is perhaps worth mentioning. So this is not, so the fact that this exists for all t greater or equal 1 is not really that immediate, and it's a consequence of a formula on what happens to the R transform when you do compression with the free projection. And this is in a paper by me and Schweitzer, which is about 10 years old, so appeared in 97, but I should mention that actually the proof, like we proved this result, the existence of this power for every t, when we were at the Fields Institute in 95 at the preceding operator algebra year at the institute. So we worked this out and we were very happy studying on the following. This is a result of the Fields Institute just a citation. Infinite divisibility, define it in the same way. Yeah, and keep the notation. So DC is deep, stay the same as before, but now with, so DC is deep of K, these are the distributions in DC of K, which are infinitely divisible, which means that they have convolution powers with respect to box plus, also for values of T that are smaller than 1. Okay? And here, just in this half transparency, I'm mentioning that everything which I said in blue about Boolean convolution in one dimension, that also extends. Yeah. So the operation, like you have addition of k tuples that are Boolean independent, you can define the Boolean cumulant, the ETA series, it linearizes, you can define all the powers for every exponent strictly bigger than zero. If the powers make sense, then the BTs make sense. So exactly the formula that I showed in one dimension, then I can use it in k variables. Yeah, because then mu in DC of k has this power, because it's greater equal 1, and has this power, because here any power bigger than 0 works. They still form a semi-group under compositions, and it still happens if you look at k equals 1, you get something, so you get a bijection, so B1 gives you indeed a bijection from DC of k, so all of DC of k into the distributions which are easily divisible with respect to periodic convolution. So still you, and that bijection, you can argue that indeed it's a generalization of the Boolean-Berkovich Pata bijection from dimension 1. Okay. So, the connection with the free Brownian motion. That one also works, and this is what I want to describe. So, that phi. Yeah, so I'd like now to work a bit on that phi, and point out that actually, so phi was the transformation of the space of distribution, which would convert free Brownian motion into the evolution under the BT. And phi, it was, here is how it was defined. It was defined by using, so, Cauchy transform and reciprocal Cauchy transform. Okay, in one dimension. And actually there, from the point of view of, what I want to do is deal with my power series and with my linearizing transforms. Yeah. So, F and G aren't so good for that.
For us, in that actually, they kind of I need to get to my positive the energy. I need to start to by 1 hour there. But anyway, here's
an observation of what you can do. So
you can replace F mu is directly connected to eta. Just because, as I was saying, in fact, it's clear from here that Z minus F mu of Z also is a linearizing transform for full length convolution, and that's the one that used quite often. But anyway, so can start using that formula F mu reciprocal Cauchy transform in terms of eta series, the Cauchy transform just substitute in terms of the moment series. Yeah.
Replace that by 1 over Z. Yeah, and we get that that transformation phi,
which was defining so nu mu is phi of nu when nu and nu are connected like over there. In fact, you can use this formula to define that transformation phi, yeah, which gives you, so you know nu, yeah, and you look at that series and you say I want mu to be defined by the fact that if eta series is equal to that. So you define by describing what to put, mu is phi of nu, yeah, mu is phi of nu, and this thing happens. Yeah? And it's quite good that actually there's a Z square here. Yeah. Let me tell you why, because when you go to non-commuting indeterminates, having a multiplication by a Z can be a pain, in the sense that you're not going to know whether the Z has to go to the left or to the right. And in fact, in that kind of situation, nothing good will happen, neither to the left or to the right. But here it is Z square, and it can be distributed to the two sides. So yeah, once again. So now we look. So phi of nu. So in the one-dimensional case, phi of nu equals mu. Yeah, is equivalent to this, and this one extends to k variables exactly in this way. Yeah. So this is a theorem in the sense that the existence of such a mu is not a priori obvious. Yeah. But kind of like so how does you're given a mu? Yeah, you take its moment series. Create this new series, yeah, okay, and you say I want a mu which has that a series exactly equal to that, yeah, and always there exists a unique such mu, and that mu is phi of mu. Yeah? So we define our phi in the way described, yes, which is like so that was double star, yes, and this is double star sub k, yes, because it's the k variable version of the one above.
Okay, so
we can define the phi, and then that relation between Brownian, so quite nice that the formula that we have, yes, it was called the diamond. It was a green diamond formula, so it was in one variable. Yeah, it was showing that so if mu is phi of nu, yeah, then when nu evolves under the pre-Brownian notion, mu evolves under the transformation p towards infinity. Yeah, and it's exactly the same formula, like it's diamonds up k, because it's in k variables, the only thing which changes is that now gamma t, instead of being one semi-circular distribution, it's the joint distribution of a free family of a1, a2, a k. So the ai's are free from each other, and each of them is semi-circular of variance.
Yeah. So, what I'm saying here is the message is that
all that stuff extends to the multivariable framework, yeah, where
again this transformation phi converts free Brownian motion into the
evolution under those transformations. And okay, now I'd like to show. This is a combinatorial fact, that's the theorem over there, and I'd like to show what's the combinatorics behind. Yes, and eventually show you that actually it's proved by bijection. Okay?
And let me observe that in fact that theorem and the whole that whole thing
is in fact like, so as long as you have formulas, yeah, you can also view them in algebraic framework where things are even simpler. Yeah. Because now you don't need to check that the various functionals that you get on polynomials are positive definite. And so reasonably with suitable growth for their percentage. Yeah. So we just say let D sub alg, so the algebraic distribution. Yeah. Just this algebraic set of linear functionals and polynomials. We have normalized that one. Yeah.
And the concepts of free and Boolean independence make sense. We can define this convolution operation exactly in the same way as on D Q of K. Can define Boolean and pre-Boolean. Therefore, can introduce the data transforms, which are now so same kind of series. Can define the convolution powers, and in fact, here, if I'm because we are in the algebraic framework, everything is implicitly visible even in the free case, yeah, multiplying an R transform by a T. By a scalar T, there are problems. There could have been problems for T smaller than 1 because of positivity issues. But if it's just algebraic framework, then all the convolution powers exist. Yeah. Okay. So then that theorem, yes, can be perfectly well stated in the algebraic framework. And. Clearly, if we prove it there, then it's going to hold in the framework of the distribution coming from the T-star framework. Yeah. So here I'm saying, okay, we can define the BTs. Yeah. In fact, here, so because we can take powers, sub-unitary powers, even for box plus every BT now is a bijection. We can define the phi by the formula, and this is trivially start with nu, create this series. Yeah. And you say, I want the mu which has the this series, the zeta series, and there's no problem with the existence of mu because in the algebraic framework, every series in the space of series that we consider is uniquely a neta mu for an algebraic distribution. So everything holds, and then the point is to prove this as an algebraic or combinatorial, as I'm going to argue in a moment. Statement. Okay. And we have to prove an equality. So I'm saying, okay, let's fix a mu, let's fix a t, and let's prove this equality between two distributions. Yeah. And how do we do? Very simple. It's an equality of two distributions. Yeah. If we can show like we pick a series. Like here in this algebraic frame, taking the R transform and yet I see these are all one-to-one matches. So if I show that these two distributions have the same R transform for the same eta series, for the same moment, it is of course, then that's going to do. Yeah? And let's show that they have the same eta series. Yeah? And I'll show you, go over the computation and show you the point. Yeah, where is the point? On the left hand side, yeah, on the left hand side is the eta series of this thing. Yeah, but the eta series for phi of something has a formula defining it, effectively here. Yeah. So phi of mu has the eta series like this, so we just replace mu by mu pre-analytic convolution with the semi-specific system. Yeah. And then if we extract the coefficient from there, now it's immediate that the best way to write the coefficient that we expect is like this. So the coefficient of length n plus 2 for n greater than equal 1. Yeah. So you choose indices i0, i1 up to im plus 1 and look at this product of the indeterminate and take the corresponding coefficient in this eta series. Yeah. And why that? Because of these I that are appearing to the left and to the right and which force I0 to be equal to IN plus 1. Yeah. And then what's left is the moment for the pre-analytic convolution. Yeah. So the coefficient of that, the coefficient of the eta series on the left hand side is the Kronecker delta. So if I0 is not equal to IN plus 1, then we get 0. If they are equal, then what remains is the moment in the middle. Yeah. So it's just the moment of the free Brownian motion. Okay, so we go here then and we plug in the
well-known formula for the moment of the Brownian motion.
Actually, I say I don't know. Like this, I think it has to be in view of the importance of the three Brownian motion. It has to be a well-known formula. I must confess it was not well-known to me until I did the computation. But like kind of considering what the level of difficulty, it looks more like kind of like an exercise which Roland and I need to put in our books. Like it's something that appears as an application of kind of don't know the moment cumulant formula. So how moment series and R transforms are connected. And I'll tell you, so I don't want to go into the details, but just tell you exactly how much I need in order to get to my point. Yeah? So it's going to be a sum. Yeah? So that moment expands as a sum. And now here I'm starting to point out, so what is the typicality of the argument? So always you get calculations like this, you sum like this, and one important point is to identify the combinatorial structure which indexes the sum. So it's going to be like it may look as a kind of an ugly sum, but it's quite important to organize it in such a way that you can write here for the indexing set some set of non-crossing partitions, preferably, yes, which you can understand. Yeah. Here it's very nice. It turns out that it's a summation indexed by the non-crossing partitions which have only blocks of one element and blocks of two elements. So you could say these are partial pairings. So they pair, they create a number of pairs inside 1 to n, and then what's not paired remains the same. Yeah. And I'll tell you roughly, so I say here, so for every row like this, there is a term row, yeah? And the term row, I tell you what kind of quality, what is it going to be? It's a power of t, namely t to the number of doubles, number of blocks with two elements, yeah? Then there's going to be some Kronecker deltas, yeah? And then there's going to be a product of moments of mu. Yeah. Once again, so this becomes a sum like that. And I can, let me show you on one specific example. Yeah, so this example. Say row, say that n is 10, and this is my partial pairing, yeah? Very nice partial pairing. And then, row has a term row in the expansion, so the moment of the three Brownian motion, which I'm writing here. Yeah. So here is the power of t into the number of Doubletons, yes, t squared. The Kronecker deltas, they are given here. They are given here, yes. So in zero, it is not true that i4 equals i5 and i3 equals i, which is kind of checking the i. So here we're looking at the term row, so the expansion that we're looking is of this moment, yes. Mu plus gamma t, if n is 10, then it's xi1, xi2, xi3. Yeah? So you look at i4, i5, i2, i8, if they match, then it's this, otherwise it's 0. And then here, these are the products of mu that you put. Yeah? And how do you figure out what they are? You say, these are obtained, you take the singletons, and you connect them as much as you can to the extent to which the doubletons allow you. Yeah? So I think I can connect here 3. With 6, with 7. Yeah, I can do this. And then I can connect on the outside 1 with 9, with 10. Yeah, okay? And then each of these red connections gives me a moment of mu which I could get. Yeah? So xi1, xi9, xi1, xi9, xi10 coming from 1, i10, and xi3, xi6, xi7 coming from the other
part.
Yeah? So my point is, I have a sum indexed by a combinatorial structure which I understand, and where I can, like every term, is something which again I can write specifically. Yeah. Okay. Good. Now let's look on the other side. So the right hand side of the equality. Yeah.
So let me put this back here. So once again, we are proving this equality by showing that the two distributions here and there have the same eta field. Yeah? And now I have to address the eta field of this guy. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's here. Yeah.
So, eta sub bt of phi of mu. Yeah. Okay, and you start working on it.
Yeah, I'm not going to show the details yet, I'm going to point something here. It's, there is this Retta which appears. Retta is a bijection from power series to power series, which keeps track what's the connection between the R transform and the etaxy. Yeah, and this is convenient to have in this kind of work. Why? Because this BT, when you define them, it's a combination of convolution powers with respect to free additive convolution and to Boolean convolution. So it's box plus and U plus. And now you know that the R transform is good for one of them, and the eta series is good for the other. And you can do, most of the time you can run your calculations by applying the R transform to the box plus and the eta series to the U plus. But every now and then you run into the situation that you have to apply the R transform to the U plus and vice versa. And then the solution that you use is you invoke this Retta which converts R transforms into eta series, and you pray that Retta has some miraculous property which helps you out. Yeah? Which happens quite quite often. Yeah? So it's a very, very nice transformation on power series. And so you work with that. So in particular here I use so eta of dt of something. Yeah, so you see phi of nu stays like one symbol there. So eta of dt of something is related to the eta of that thing by using Retta and the rescaling by 1 over Tnt. Yeah? Okay, anyway, so you work that out and you come again to my general, I think this is a matter of principle. If you want to prove free probability formula by summation over non-crossing partition, here is how you go. You try, so you've got your equation that you want to prove, and each of the sides, you write it as a summation over a combinatorial structure that you understand. Yeah, and here it comes, perhaps it's not so nice, but still it's nice enough. So because it's the coefficient of zi0, zi1, zin plus 1, here is going to be non-crossing partition of a set with n plus 2 elements, 0, 1, dot, 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 up to n plus 1. Yeah? And namely, so there is a term which I'm going to call term prime. Yeah? So it was term rho in the preceding sum, which was doing the other side of the equation. Here is, for every pi like this, there is a contribution, term prime sub pi. Yeah? And what kind of pi do I want? Non-crossing partitions of the set 0, 1, 2, up to n plus 1, where 0 and n plus 1 have to be in the same block. Yeah? And in addition, turns out the contribution will be anything 0 if there is a if there are singletons. So phi without singletons, which match 0 with n plus 1, they're in the same block, and the non-cross. Yeah? And this term prime phi, I'm not going to give concrete examples, but it is again something, there is a power of t, namely t to the power number of blocks of phi minus 1, times some Kronecker delta, times some product of moments of nu. Yeah? Okay? So therefore, if I want to prove my formula, what is this coming to in the end? It's coming to this equation, yeah, where I have one large summation is equal to another large summation. And I say, like, in principle, you say that these kinds of large summations, they are scary, and you should avoid them, but this is my point here for how you prove by using combinatorics. No, you shouldn't be scared by large summations. In fact, you like to have them, yeah? Because this means, so there are lots of terms, yeah? If there are lots of terms, but each individual term is civilized, yeah? So instead of having few ugly terms, you have lots of nice terms, and these lots of nice terms, they are indexed by combinatorial structures that you understand, yeah? And now the stroke would be now, prove this by bijection, namely, find the bijection between this indexing set and that indexing set, such that when rho corresponds to pi, this term from here corresponds to the term over there. Okay? Which, as I'm repeating, so makes sense if you look, and always, like what's not being explained here is that always you try small values of n, yeah? And there is a conjecture which I make, kind of a meta conjecture which I make, and Michael Anshelevich dispute, which is that if it works up to n equals 4, then it's true. Well, Michael says that only if it works until n equals 5, then it's true. So anyway, but you have so the forms, the term sub rho and the term prime sub pi, they are kind of same kind of expression, yeah. And it is you may try, yeah, to get it, yeah. You may try to finish it by bijection. Yeah, and what I'm saying, so like if it would happen, say you've got some equality like this, and you get the indexing sums like this is kind of a meta comment too. Yeah, say I have the combinatorial structures on the left and on the right, and I don't
find the bijection between them. What does this mean? This means that my sums don't have enough terms. So what I'm going to do is then split the sums even more in even smaller bits until I find something which I can match on the two sides of the equation. Yeah? But anyway, so here I don't need to do that because there is a natural bijection which I call alpha from that set over there to this set over here. Yeah? And I can describe it to you nicely. That's what I was saying, that this is a nice opportunity. So there is this formula which is being proved, and also the alpha is quite amusing and nice to explain. Yeah. So, well, actually, like to begin with, so yeah, both these sets, they are counted by the same set of numbers for the Moskvin numbers. Yeah. And what's going to do alpha to a partial pairing to get a pi like over there? You could say the procedure is assign the singletons to the doubletons
in the row. Yeah. So how is that alpha working? Yeah. So here I have my the same row as before.
Yeah. Okay. So how much is the pi? Yeah. Corresponding to that.
And the procedure goes like this. So I'll say, so assign singletons to doubletons. Before doing that, I'm going to say, see here. So pi is supposed to be a non-trivial partition of a set which has 2 points more than 1 to 3. And it's having a 0 on the left and an n plus 1 to the right. So let me mark them here then. 0 and 11. Yeah. And let me copy here. So a fresh copy of pi, of rho. Yeah. So 4 to 5. 2 is 8. Yeah. And in addition, these blue dots that I added, I'm adding an extra doubleton here. Okay. So rho for the moment, yeah, I just copied it but added to it another doubleton. Yeah. And now I'm saying assign the singletons to doubletons. So the singletons are still here. 1, 3, 6, 7. Okay? Draw perpendiculars from every singleton until it falls somewhere, and that's where it goes. Okay. So here you are. Yeah? Very easy. Bijection. Yeah, I mean, kind of the description of how it is. Yeah, and then what you get is exactly a pi of the other kind. Yeah? So it's a non-trivial partition of the elements numbers from 0 to 11. Doesn't have singletons because of how it was constructed, and also 0 and 11 are in the blue block. Yeah, and then so there is now some stuff to prove. Yeah, formally. So is this really a bijection? Yes, it is. Does it make correspond this summation term by term? Yes, it does. Yeah, but the point is that so once you have this, then this ends the proof of the theorem. Yeah, about that formula connecting the free Brownian motion to the evolution under the transformation PP. Yeah, and then I'll conclude like very quickly. Let me also make a remark because I said at the beginning that there is this other thing the operator models, well, they don't appear so much here, but where would they appear? There was this other theorem too, and what was it saying? So it was introducing, theorem 2 was introducing the transformation phi as a transformation of this space of distributions which come from the C-star framework. And now if you think of phi as something defined algebraically, yeah, on that larger space, then the content of theorem 2 is that this phi defined up there carries the space of distribution C of K in Twitter. So the distribution with C star significance are mapping to that, so that space is mapping to itself. And this is the part that you do by using a Fock space model. Yeah, and let me point out, so I'm not going to show exactly what it is, but it's a simple Fock space model. It's a truncated Fock space, really. Yeah, and so you start with nu, yeah, and you know that nu is BC, is from BC of K, so therefore you can realize nu as a joint distribution of, so you can assume that these are some self-adjoint operators on a nu of H, distribution taken with respect to a vector state. Yeah. Okay. And then I'm saying there is a simple construction which, starting with that H, where the H, giving the new or leaving, you do you just so you add a vacuum vector and you do K copies
of the original phase H, and there you can easily find some pins which realize the mu. Yeah, mu equals, so originally there, phi of mu equals mu, mu is defined as an algebraic distribution, but of course if you can realize it by operator, then it has to be in this case. Yeah. And let me point out why isn't this so surprising that it there is so it's not a full box, it's just a
It's I don't have the formula defining mu. So
it's not so surprising because if you look actually at how mu was defined, yeah, mu is defined in terms of the moment series, which is just the moment series, and the eta series, which is a series from Boolean probability. Yeah? So it's true that phi connects two processes, both of them with significant infinity probability, the free Brownian motion and the evolution towards infinity divisibility. But phi itself, yeah, is an object which is coming from the Boolean world, yeah, because it's in terms of the eta series, and in the Boolean world, this is the kind of Fock space construction that we expect when you try to realize something by using operators. Okay, so end of course.
Here on, yeah, or like maybe an email address or an email, some.
Sorry, that this light is in
my eyes. I'll put it on.
I'm sure you have the
point. It's just nice to draw on the transparency stuff.
Oh, for sure, yeah, it's just a matter of the eyes. Okay, this is R. I think all the rest is legible, but this is R. This gamma is R.
It's R.
Right.
Okay, sure. This means PDF files. You would prefer to have some PDF files?
Yeah.
Which I will send by email. Yeah.
That
okay.
Would be lovely. Sure. Maybe if you can. Are you making this?
These are. Apparently, they will go on the website of the field.
Okay.
So,
that's lovely.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you
very
much.
I was talking to your friend Roland. In different occasion. Okay, and I enjoy this very much, although I'm not in this.
Good, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your talk. I'm
very flattered. Thank you very much.
No need to be flattered. It's just pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks.
suffered in the bus, but
yeah, it was really nice.
Maybe to the end, Were you going to lunch?
Yeah.
Lunching? I can join you if you give me like 5 minutes to collect my.
I have the same request as I did with the previous talk.
Sure. This one apparently will go. Will actually go on the site of the Field Institute. But I can give you. I don't know when how they post them. So I can give you. I can give you one very like. Tonight. I can put it in your mailbox tonight.
Oh, that's very great.
I'm slow, but if I try faster, then I'm just gonna spread them like they're gonna jump out of my hand all over the, and then I'll have to start again. So actually, slow is fast in my case, in the sense that it's still optimal despite being slow. Ah, it's so good now, so much better having this behind.
You could also leave your backpack in the...
I would.
He has an office here.
Who's having? You're having an office?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I don't think I have anything. I mean, whatever is valuable, I'll, like, which is my wallet, I'll take it because I need it for lunch, so... Yeah, I know that. In you go. Is it Hunhi or Hanhi?
Hunhi.
Hunhi. This is how I would call it in Romanian, actually. Like my first reaction. Well, yeah, because in Romanian you read the U as U.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So you'd be Hunhi, but then Kent tell me that you go for Hanhi.
Yeah, it was my mistake. I have used something else to make those people, to make people pronounce Hunhi.
Hunhi. So in you are from Korea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there you have different characters, different alphabet.
We have our own
ideograms or what do you have?
Yeah, we have our own and we use Chinese characters also.
So therefore your name in Korean is something that you have in a certain name which could be transliterated in a number of ways to the
there is no standard, so people used to read it like Hanhi. Yeah, I know,
in English, in the English speaking world, you don't
understand. Right. Unless you write your name. Maybe if you put a sharp on the U. Or I
should have used O-O. Yeah, probably.
That would still make a long... Okay, so you left your...
Yeah, it's not really there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.